Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll and Mooring. We are your co-hosts, David Robbins and Peter Ayer, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without.
And we start with bid protest news. So on April 2nd of this year, GAO published a final rule implementing the electronic protest docketing system, known as EPDS, that will allow for electronic filing and documentation dissemination for protests, in addition to making other changes to GAO regulations to streamline the protest process. The rule takes effect on May 1st of 2018. Several of our colleagues have been using that system on a pilot basis, and by all accounts, it does seem to be quite a good system, so certainly something to look forward to. EPDS will be the sole means for filing documents in connection with a protest, with two exceptions, and that is documents containing classified material and documents that are not suitable for filing through the system because of size or format. GAO has also confirmed that there will be a uniform fee of $350 for filing a protest using EPDS. The fee will be used to cover costs of establishing and operating the system and will be considered reimbursable if GAO recommends that the agency reimburse protest costs. There's one other really notable change that's more on the procedural side. So it involves timeliness rules. So in circumstances where a basis for challenging a solicitation becomes known after the solicitation's closing date, but the solicitation does not establish a new closing date, GAO revised its timeline rules to require protests of these improprieties to be filed within 10 days of when the protester knew or should have known the basis of the protest. That's an important change. GAO also clarified its existing statutory jurisdiction concerning task or delivery orders and non-procurement instruments. It's now codified GAO will review protests where an agency is improperly using a non-procurement instrument to procure goods or services. One other important change that does impact protests, and this has to do with debriefings within the DoD context. Late last month, DoD issued a class deviation to ensure that all DoD agencies comply with the enhanced post-award debriefing set forth in Section 818 of the NDAA for fiscal year 2018. Effective immediately, offerors may submit additional questions within 2 days of the debriefing, to which the agency is required to respond within 5 days. A protest filed within 5 calendar days of receipt of the government's responses to these additional questions triggers issuance of the automatic stay of performance provided for by CECA, the Competition and Contracting Act. It's really significant for a couple reasons. First, it sets the expectation that DoD agencies will provide meaningful responses to offeror questions, although the debriefing process doesn't alter the categories of information an agency is prohibited from disclosing. Second, offerors will not be penalized for using these procedures. Unsuccessful offerors who make use of this enhanced process will still have the same clock in which to timely file a protest and get the stay. So we're seeing this process already being rolled out, a lot of important strategic considerations about how to use this process, but it is very important to make sure that communications with the agency clearly establishes, are you within this established framework, this class deviation? Because that's what you really need to validate to make sure your timeline is still within CECA and that your debriefing clock has not closed at this point. So a lot of really interesting developments there. David, over to you.
Thank you. And continuing the bid protest trend, but this one is a sort of an espionage risk and bid protest news story. And it's about the Court of Federal Claims decision that unsealed, I guess, on the 27th of March. Ironbow Technologies LLC versus United States. So again, on March 27th, court unsealed its dismissal of a pre-award bid protest challenging the Social Security Administration's decision to eliminate the quotation of Ironbow Technologies from consideration for award for a contract for desktop printers and related supplies and services because the proposed printers presented an unacceptable supply chain risk to the government. Now that's interesting, right? This is the Social Security Administration saying desktop printers present supply chain risk. The court granted the government and interveners motions for judgment on the administrative record, holding that SSA reasonably concluded Iron Bow could put the government at risk of China-backed cyber espionage due to its plan to provide printers from Lexmark International Inc., which is owned by companies with Chinese government connections. Upon identification of the apparent contract awardee, the SSA's request for quotations required it to conduct a supply chain risk assessment of not only the prime, but also of all subcontractors, suppliers, distributors, and manufacturers involved in the supply chain. The RFQ set out 9 specific factors to consider when conducting the risk assessment. SSA conducted the risk assessment of Iron Bow, the apparent awardee. Because Iron Bow relied on Lexmark as its primary supplier of printer equipment, and because Lexmark is owned by firms associated with the Chinese government, the SSA concluded that Iron Bow's quotation presented an unacceptable security risk. Of course, Iron Bow challenged the SSA's decision, arguing that Lexmark's connections to the Chinese government were, quote, untrue and unsubstantiated, unquote. The court rejected that argument, finding that the SSA's risk assessment was reasonable and in accordance with the terms of the RFQ. Specifically, the court found that the record showed the agency reasonably concluded that there were connections between the foreign owners of Lexmark and the Chinese government, that the consideration of this connection was proper and consistent with the terms of the RFQ for conducting such a risk assessment. The agency reasonably determined that Lexmark's Chinese government associations represented a potential risk to the government's supply chain, given that the SSA relied on congressional reports finding that the Chinese government actively engages in cyber espionage against the United States, and the SSA reasonably determined that Lexmark's owners could influence Lexmark despite the existence of Lexmark's national security agreement with the government, which the SSA determined did not mitigate its concerns. This is a really surprising analysis, right? But also a surprising deference to the agency in conducting that analysis. And it's a continuation of a trend we've seen quite a bit in M&A news and government contracting news, in the NDAA, about what products and services are permitted in government offices under government contracts and what risks they present within the U.S. government. Just a fascinating case all the way around.
Agreed. And now we move on to a couple of other items. So first on FedRAMP, we don't have time to go into a whole lot of detail, but for those of you who follow FedRAMP news closely, we wanted to alert you to a couple of new documents that were released recently addressing the continuous monitoring requirements. So I'd encourage you to reach out to either David or to myself if you've got questions or want more information. And then we end on an interesting news story, and David's going to talk about the development for SAM, or the System for Award Management. This is literally a story that lots of our clients are paying attention to, lots of questions, and certainly of interest to a lot of us. So David, I'll turn it over to you.
Yep, thank you, Peter. Now this gets 2 headlines in my book, right? The first one is, it really takes some brazen activity to do this, right? And the second is, just with all the cyber-focused news we talked about earlier, this is an interesting counterpoint to when the government perhaps is the victim versus when a contractor is a victim and who's on the hook for what. Okay, so on March 27th, 2018, of course, the GSA published an update on their System for Award Management website indicating that the Office of Inspector General was investigating alleged third-party fraudulent activity in the System for Award Management, which is where the government contractors are required to register, input their financial information, their bank information, direct deposit info, basically identity theft for corporate entities, you know, all the source of that information. The GSA update suggests that this fraudulent activity involved redirecting federal payments to bank accounts not associated with the appropriate contractor and may have impacted contractors whose financial information changed in the past year. GSA advised entities, you know, those companies registered in SAM, to review their registration information and particularly their financial information. And the update provided contact information in case an entity finds the bank account info to be incorrect. GSA makes clear, and this I love, right, they make clear that, quote, entities are responsible for ensuring that their information is current and correct in SAM in accordance with a particular FAR paragraph, and continues, and should routinely review such information for accuracy, unquote. Now, we can't help but point out that if this were a contractor system suffering this sort of attack, under the current information security regime, the contractor would have had detailed disclosure obligations, extensive mitigation and remediation to undergo, and potentially enormous liability. But, you know, when it's the government, we get notes reminding us saying, yeah, not our fault, your information's incorrect. Not quite fair, is it?
Agree. There's one other sort of bookend to that I just want to mention, which is one of the remedial measures that the government has undertaken is that for new registrations, the government is now requiring much more extensive information, including notarized letters that have to be submitted in order to get a new SAM registration. So we are seeing quite a bit more delay for companies trying to register in SAM. So just be aware that what was a multi-day process can now turn into a multi-week process. So plan ahead, and interesting news for sure.
And with that, we'll close. That's all for this edition. We'll see you again in 2 weeks. In the meantime, I can be reached at 202-624-2627 and Peter at 202-624-2807.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. Subscribe on iTunes, and if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.